Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Och välkommen till Seglingspodden. Detta är en podd om svensk elitsegling. Och jag som pratar heter Anna Östling.
Seglingspodden presenteras i samarbete med Helly Hansen, Båtmässan Göteborg, Pilot Pen och Brant Båt.
Och välkommen till ett fartfyllt avsnitt med en stjärna som alltid ler på hamnplan när man möts. Nu ska ni nämligen få höra ingen mindre än Phil Robertson. Från Nya Zeeland, nu bosatt i Billdal. Han bjöd på en av historiens mäktigaste segrar. Vinsten i det supercoola M32-racet på Marstrand med $1 million i potten. Två VM-guld i matchracing och nyss korad, inofficiellt, SM-mästare i mått. Han är rorsman och teamleader på kanadensiska Sail GP-laget. Och det Phil inte vet om foiling, det vet nog ingen. Welcome to Seglingspodden Superstar, Phil Robertson!
Nice, well, thanks for having me. It's really cool to be here. I'm looking forward to what's coming in the next hour or so.
Yeah. We are so happy and kind of prepared, but you never know where the conversation will end up. I know you have huge amount of stories and knowledge, and it will be super fun to hear all your stuff and what you have been doing for so many years now. So where did it all start?
Oof. I guess it started with birth. I existed.
Yeah.
And I was born into a sailing family in a way. My parents actually met sailing in the UK. My mother's British and my father's a Kiwi. And yeah, my whole life has been around boats. I think when I was about 2 years old, my dad was always building boats in the garage. And I think one of the first memories he sort of has of me is me wanting to help him when he was at work and breaking into the garage and actually putting a nice big saw cut in the side of one of his boats he was building.
Oh,
so
no.
Yeah, be careful with 2-year-olds and boats. But that's, yeah, like I was born into a sailing mad family, and all our summer holidays were with boats. And if we went away, there would be two cars and two boats going down the highway. So yeah, it was quite the scene.
It's in your blood.
I guess you can say that, yeah.
But sailing on New Zealand is almost like a national sport, beside maybe, I don't know, rugby, cricket. But it feels like the sailing country.
Yeah, a little bit. It's very accessible, which is nice. And I guess the weather's mild enough in winter that you can still sail all winter. I'm from Auckland, so the biggest city. But the thing I really like about sailing in New Zealand is it's really accessible to all people. And I don't come from a extremely wealthy family at all. And I think if you look at the sport in America and some other countries, it's a very exclusive sport where only the wealthy can afford to do it. And for me, that's quite foreign, because in New Zealand, it's you just have a boat and you can go sailing. You can go to the yacht club and use a boat, and it's very accessible. And obviously, we're a small island, so there tends to be a lot of water around us.
Yeah,
I think Auckland, from one coast to the other, I think the shortest distance is 1 kilometer. So you have a lot of ocean, a lot of water, and yeah, lots of opportunities to go sailing.
I'm so stoked because we will be there by the time that this episode is out, because we will be doing the Women's World Match Racing Championships. And I've never sailed in Auckland. Do you have any good advice, tips?
Yeah, watch the current.
Yeah, everybody says that. Yeah. I will definitely watch the current.
Yeah, I did all my match racing out of the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron. So I'm assuming it's going to be exactly where you're sailing. And yeah, there's plenty of current.
Yeah, we might have a 1 hour session after this sit down to go through that. Nice. I'm not going to do that now. All right, so you were a small kid. Phil went into small boats, I guess, Optis, or how did you start sailing on your own?
Yeah, exactly. So I started sailing with my dad, and we would go racing on Sunday afternoons, and maybe with my brother as well. And I would probably, well, most of the time I'd just fall asleep if it was light winds and drag my hands through the water. And yeah, I wasn't exactly helping the boat go fast. But I started sailing the Opti when I was about 10 years old, 10, 11 years old, I think, and never really stopped since then. And it's been quite the addiction. But I grew up with two brothers. So one is 18 months older than me and one is actually 5 years younger. But we were extremely competitive. And I think that environment of having an older brother that's also into the sport, also very athletic, and everything we did all day, every day was competing or racing around the house or whatever it was a competition. So I was born and bred into a very competitive environment as well.
Yeah. So when you stepped into your own boat, was it, you know, with a love of competing and racing?
Yeah, exactly. It was the love of racing and literally just wanting to beat my older brother.
Yeah.
So it was, it's a hard thing to do, but yeah, I managed to do it once or twice in my lifetime.
Right. Talking about like role models and idols, maybe he was your role model, but besides from your family, growing up on New Zealand, you have so many sailing stars. Did that count as well?
You nailed it on the head. When I started sailing Optimus was right when New Zealand had won the America's Cup and brought it back to New Zealand. And I can tell you there's nothing more inspiring than seeing these giant boats in your harbour sailing every single day with people that you looked up to and wanted to be like, I guess. And that's so inspirational for a young kid. And it's something that I think about today, even with all my projects and teams, how much of an impact you can have on people's lives just by going and racing and being around and being seen. And yeah, for me, that was huge. And I remember you can hear the boats when they ease the runners on those big old America's Cup boats. You can hear it through the whole city.
Yeah.
So I'd be sitting in class and I could hear the boats sailing on the harbour.
Yeah.
When I was when I was a teenager, and that's probably why I didn't stay in school too long.
Oh, it gives me goosebumps. But what's the like the biggest difference now? Because you've been living here in Sweden for quite many years now, right? Love brought you here, I guess.
Yeah, love has brought a lot of Australians and Kiwis to Sweden.
Yeah.
But I've been here, I would say, very on and off for probably about 6 years now.
Yeah.
And I think for me, my career, it was a choice to move to Europe, and purely for the ease of travel and competitions are all around Europe and North America. And to fly backwards and forwards from New Zealand, it's a 30-hour journey each way. So it's very taxing on the body. I know some friends that still do it, but it's brutal. So yeah, for me, it was big just to move up to Europe and base myself out of here. And yeah, here we are. We've been in Sweden for about 6 years, and it's
we are really happy about that, because now we can see our kids. They have like role models and idols flying around outside the GKSS, and you are. When you're home, it feels like you're there all the time. Like every session we do in the Far East, we see you coming in from the water and you're like, hi, hi. Do you do a lot of sailing on your own between all the racing.
Maybe it's something people don't understand, but with the, I guess, SailGP, the boats are so complicated and so complex to get in the water, and time sailing is so valuable. And if you're not prepared and not ready to utilize that time, then you're going to waste a lot of valuable seconds on the water. And I think an event would probably do an average of about 10 hours of sailing over 4 days.
Yeah.
So the training days, you'd get 4 to 6 hours of training. And it's not a lot.
No.
It's not a lot when you've got so much to learn. So, yeah we spend a lot of our time, downtime, sailing, flying boats, foiling boats, whatever you can, just to try and keep learning.
Yeah. And here in Sweden, you have different boats. You are out in your Yarmouth, but you also have the A-Cat or?
Yeah, so.
Or the Nacra, or what? You are a foiling guy. We could say that, right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I would say I'm a little bit, I like adrenaline. I don't mind a bit of adrenaline and speed and things when they get a bit wild and crazy. I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think growing up, there wasn't an option for that for me. So it was the Optimus, which is
not
very
so,
slow.
Not so much adrenaline.
I went and ended up, we have a couple of boats in New Zealand, which are great. The P-Class, a phenomenal little dinghy. It's smaller than the Optimus in length, but a lot more sail area and very hard to sail. And then I sort of moved into the 420, and I have to say I quit sailing after sailing the 420, thinking that was the future. And for me to go down an Olympic path at the time, it was sailing a 470.
Yeah.
And I had no offense to all those 470 sailors, but zero inspiration to go and sail a 470. And that's just based on my size and I guess.
Yeah.
That's it. But I just fell in love with sailing with a team and bigger boats, and again going very slow. But the competitive nature of match racing was so cool when you're racing within a boat length of another boat pretty much the whole race, and it's really strategic. You've got to have great crew work, your communication has to be really good, and that sort of set my foundation, I guess, to go forward, which is quite cool. But again, slow boats, and I was probably quite late getting into a fast boat, and now everything I do is foiling and flying above the water, whether it's for leisure, for fun, or to try and develop any skills I can. So, a lot of foiling.
But you use the hours here in Gothenburg, like for example, you go out in your month, you use that as training session to develop and get better so you can perform with your team Canada, or is it also, you know, I love sailing, I don't know what to do today, let's go foiling? Or how's the mind?
that's a funny one. I guess I would say I'm a active rester as well. So if I'm going to have a day off and rest and I'm really tired, I would want to be doing something. So whether that's running in the forest or going out on the water in any way, foiling or going hiking, I have to be active to rest. And I would say everything, I also sort of have this mentality that anything that's foiling, you're going to be learning as well. And everything I do is, I guess, based around my passion, which is being on the water. And everything now happens to be foiling. And I can tell you I've learned so much from wing foiling or kite foiling, or now we're starting to do foiling with SUPs and going downwind with a paddle and on a foil. And even that, like the learning you do from that, at some point you're going to take that into the F50 and go, oh, I remember this. And the way I sort of explain it, the smaller the craft or the boat, the more you sort of feel it and you feel everything involved. So sailing the Moth, you feel so many different things compared to sailing an F50. And those things that you feel, it really translates over to the big boat where you don't have the feel because it's so big and there's so much load, but you sort of know, or you can feel a little bit, and then you have the knowledge from doing all
and
your learning.
And it maybe makes the difference if you can can feel the big boat as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the finesse that you need to sail a big boat at the front of the fleet and against the best people in the world is phenomenal. And if you lack that finesse and that, you know, fine tuning all the time, then you're not going to win. But maybe you'll do okay. But yeah, it's something I think when you get to the bigger the boat, the less, I guess, feedback that it gives you in some areas.
Mm. And you really are a professional sailor, and you're really professional in everything you do with your, if you Google Phil Robertson, you find a like nice proper landing page. And
that's good.
Yeah, that's great. And I actually saw, this is a part that I like, with your YouTube channel, you had maybe 10, 15 episodes. They are quite short, though. I would like you to, you know, do the longer episodes. Is that something you can you can do for me?
I can do that for you, Anna.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Do you do them yourself? Produce them?
I don't produce them myself. And it's a real fine balance that, I guess, professionalism. Now, the thing I love the most is being on the water. And I struggle to sit down for more than an hour.
Yeah,
this podcast is kept. I'll battle through.
Yeah,
now I struggle to sit down for long periods of time, and I think when I look at sport and as an athlete, you have to have some form of professionalism and presentation, and people need to be able to find you as well, and that's important. Which I think in the past I probably didn't think it was very important, but some people have explained to me that you also need to make sure you have an image that people can relate to and find and work with. And I have a small team around me as well now that work with me and help me, I guess, with the
social media
side of what we do. And I do think it's important. But again, I would love to do more, but it's just time. And the more time you spend, it's trying to find that balance
of course,
media, social media, and also actually just getting better at sailing.
Yeah, of course. But one episode was about you wing foiling mission 60 nautical miles in New Zealand. That was quite a big mission. Were you tired after?
I was very tired, yeah. Yeah, that was really cool. One of my best mates is a water sports enthusiast as well, and I grew up sailing against him. He doesn't race competitively anymore, but he got into wing foiling right at the beginning, and I sort of thought it was very geeky and a bit weird. And he came over and I said, can I have a turn? So I actually bought a foil myself, and purely for going surfing on it or paddleboarding and trying to catch waves. And he brought his wing along. He said, "You got to try this." And I was like, "Oh, it's a bit, that's super strange, and nobody's going to get into that." But I had a go, and instantly I was hooked. I was like, "Wow, this is incredible."
Were you this kind of guy who like took the wing and just popped out of the water and flew around?
Yes.
I hate you.
Yeah, I know. No, I'd say I'm very blessed in that manner. I have a bit of athletic ability, I would say, and things like that I can pick up really fast. I'm a very practical person, so when it comes to trying to learn a new skill or a new sport, I can pick it up quite fast, and which is nice. It's handy. But wing foiling, was something that I guess I had some knowledge of it and was racing foiling boats, so I understood it, which I think helps a lot. I picked it up, had a go, and I was hooked. And I stole his wing off him for a week and ended up buying one the next week.
And now you see all kind of sailors and all kind of people out on the water doing it. So you were wrong.
I was very wrong, and I wish I invested into it back then. Maybe the next little fad that it comes along that I think is weird and crazy. And,
I'll
take it on and I'll start a company. Yeah. It'll be good.
Also in one of the episodes, Foiling with Phil, you said that this will change the sport forever. Everything is going foiling now. And I guess you're right. But you are a foiling expert, and with more and more boats flying, also the smaller ones, we're happy to see that kind of boats maybe on the match racing circuit. And I know you've been doing the 69F and trying to, you know, figure out how we can take those boats into match racing. What's your thought about that, and will it work?
Will it work? 100%. Yeah. I wish I was a kid today, because I think their future is incredible. Like in this sport, the boats that they get to sail now from such a young age is, wow, the coolest things. I wish they were around when I was younger. But yeah, I'm a firm believer the whole industry, marine industry, whether it's transport, sport, whatever it is, leisure, it's going to be foiling. And I honestly believe we're going to have cruising yachts that are going to be foiling in the near future. And I would probably say if you're not into it, you need to start. Whatever way it is, you need to start learning and get into it, because it's for sure it's the future of our sport. And yeah, whether it's a 14-year-old kid now, they don't want to sail opties or anything that's not foiling anymore. So it's cool. And you've got some amazing companies that are developing the transport side of it as well, with ferries. And I think the beauty of foiling is it reduces so much drag that your propulsion can be a lot less efficient. So you're starting to see electric becoming a real option as well, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely for the future. But talking about, we go back to the match racing part. My question is that I love your answer, by the way, because I feel the same.
Yeah.
But what do we say to the people that are still saying, distance will be too long, short, like the courses will be, the areas will be too small, boats are too fast. How will we do the setup in your, if you would be able to, you know, draw the map, what's the way to run the races?
Yeah, I think with sailing and match racing, you know, people at the start when it moved to catamarans said, the distance is going to be huge, it's going to be boring. And yeah, they were right for the first maybe year or two. It was.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not boring, but it's a boat speed race.
And people or teams were picking up in different
Exactly. Yeah. Some teams were, their learning curve was a lot faster, some were slower. And you look at the America's Cup, it was the same. One boat was a mile ahead and you knew who was going to win the race. And suddenly you put another cycle in and people develop and get better, and the racing was incredible.
Yeah.
Same with the M32 racing. Sort of the longer it was around, the closer the racing gets. And that, I'm a big believer in that. I think as you change class or boat or I guess go from 2D to 3D with foiling, there's going to be some big gaps to start. And you just have to invest a bit of time into it and getting better. And I think the racing's going to get a lot better. And eventually you will be having tacking jewels on foils and it will be close. And I think if you look at the new sort of AC40s that have come out, it's an autopilot flying the boat now. And as long as you can sail the boat well, you're going to be match racing at 35 knots upwind and 45 knots downwind. It's cool. It's
very cool.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe some venues are going to be a bit tight and small. And I think the difficulty with the foiling is the boats are a lot more complex. But I think as technology develops and our knowledge develops as well, it's going to get a lot better and a lot easier and a lot more accessible.
Do you think we will see the 69F flying around on the Match Cup Marstrand in the future?
Who have you been talking to? I think there's some really cool boats out there now, and the 69F is one of them that's probably a little bit of a forerunner when it comes to small foiling monohulls. They've got a nice little package there. They're a fun little boat to sail. It's difficult to sail, but it's cool. And I honestly, if I had the option to pick a boat for Match Cup, it would probably be that boat at the moment. And that's based on the size of the venue, the size of the boat, and sort of the speeds they do. And yeah, it's spectacular. But again, it would be
demanding.
Very demanding. Yeah, yeah. They're a physical boat. Especially for one person on board, it's a very physical role. I think you'd see some pretty big distances between teams, but I think that's the future and you just have to get on board and invest into it.
You said that you would like to, you know, be the young sailor today. Let's say you are 20 today and you have all those options. What would you do?
That's a very difficult question. That's where I think there's the really big divide in the sport now between the top of the sport and the ones trying to find a pathway or a career in the sport. When I was around, the World Match Racing Tour was sort of that pathway. But as the boats have developed and evolved and changed, and from monohulls to cats to foiling cats to now foiling monohulls, it's really difficult for series like that to adapt and incorporate those types of vessels. And yeah, I think it's difficult for a young person today, but I'm still a big believer that if you're one of the best in the world at whatever you do, your specific craft, whether it's match racing, fleet racing, keelboat racing, you're going to find a way to get better and adapt and change. And I still look at my match racing background in keelboat sailing and the sort of fundamentals that I learned sailing those boats, with your communication, with your teamwork, your planning, your structures, your decision making. It's all so relative to what we do today. We just had to make a lot of those decisions a lot faster, but it's the same thing. The process is the same. So yeah, whatever you're doing, you're going to be, building your foundations for the future. And yeah, you've got to be very committed though, that's for sure. But go sail fast boats. You have to know how to sail fast boats.
That's a great conclusion. But also for you to pick up a young girl or a guy into your fast boat, I guess that the skills of being a part of the team and all those stuff is also very crucial. And that's something you can get of, you know, going out in the Far East in GKSS or keelboat or whatever, just trying to, you know, be the sailor that can, you know, do a lot of different kind of sailing and maybe be good in a team.
Yeah, that's probably the most important thing. And I've just come off a week of being in Canada with kids from 14 to 30 years old. Maybe not all kids, but that's one of the things I've been saying the most is go and sail as many different boats as you can. Don't just sail your Laser or your 49er and be the world's best at that. That's important, but you have to know how to sail many different crafts. And I think you'd probably agree, sailing the IOD is probably one of the boats that teaches you the most in life.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
This is a over 100-year-old design. It's wooden and it's slow. You can't turn it when you push the tiller. And if you don't trim your mainsail on to go into attack and maybe even ease the jib and back the jib a little. And now I sail an F50. And I mean, you can do what you like with the boat, but if you want to do the best tack in the world, it's the same principle. You trim the wing on a bit, you're trying to turn the boat with your sails, not just the steering wheel. So yeah, I think that you learn so much from sailing so many different boats, and it all transfers to the boat that you're trying to perfect your craft in, I guess. And that's what I say to most of the kids now, is just go and get experience, but still be good at one thing or one boat or one discipline, but go and learn how to sail many different yachts.
Yeah, great. And talking about that sort of team effort in the IOD or in the faster boats. You started when you were young back on New Zealand with your Waka racing. You brought up that match racing team and you went out on the circuit. How's your thoughts of, you know, leading a team and being a leader on board?
Yeah, I guess leading for me has probably been a little bit natural as well. And I think it's just part of my personality and what I was born with. But I really enjoy it, actually. I enjoy that responsibility and I guess having that position. But it's, yeah, I think we're as... Yeah, sorry, I've just lost my...
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Wow.
But maybe we'll say... I like that part, so we will not cut it. Maybe just end it.
Yeah, elaborate.
Yeah. So as a team leader... It comes natural for you and you like that part. But how do you do to... And now you can maybe answer the question with my question, if you understand.
Yeah, gotcha.
How do you, you know, help the other guys on board to, you know, get to a higher level? Because I think maybe that's a part of being a leader as well, you know, to...
Yeah, look, I guess the question is sort of how do you lead? And I think through my experiences, like the last sort of 3 years of my career has all been with really inexperienced people on the world's fastest boats. And I think one thing that I've found really important is to be extremely patient and actually give people the time to learn and don't dictate is probably what I would say, and don't tell people how to do something. Try and, like, I always try to ask a question to them and let them come up with the answer, and I think people learn a lot faster that way. So that's when people are trying to learn on my boats or I have some more knowledge in them, I'll never just directly tell them how to do it or what to do. I'll try and always, I guess, ask a question to see if they can come up with the answer, and that then for me that learning is a lot more cemented.
And you've been in quite many different teams now. You were saying you just came back from Canada. You're now the skipper in Team Canada SailGP. You did China team. You did Spain for a period as well. How is it to, you know, jump into a new project? And is it always new people on board, or do you use your mates in the different kind of projects?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. I've sailed for, I think 10 different countries, or maybe it's more now. And I think in all team sports as well, the longer a team's together, the better it's going to be. And the last 3 years, I think in SailGP, I've sailed with, first three seasons, it's been three different teams with three completely different groups of people on board. And that's difficult.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, it is difficult. And I've always sort of started my career saying, we'll stick together as a team and we'll just go from project to project. But as you get down a professional route, your role's so specific as well. And I think it's actually really difficult to do that. Some people have had the luxury to be able to do that and stick together for a long time, and it really shows. But I guess I haven't had that ability or luxury to have someone by my side the whole time. And
because it's not your project with your sponsors, your money. Is it more like you're getting a phone call, hey, I want you to be on this boat now? Or how does this professional world work?
Yeah, so I would say that's probably the biggest way the professional world works is, you'll get a phone call I don't know if I've ever got a phone call, but usually you have to hassle people as well. If you're not asking for jobs and knocking on doors, you're probably not going to get them.
No.
And that's probably another little tip for the young ones out there. Don't expect things to come to you. You have to go and find them and get them. But yeah, it's different. The sailing for different teams is, it gets very, there's some challenges, but all these teams are, coming in with their own money, their own sponsors, their own structures. And thankfully the one now with the Canadian team, I was one of the first ones employed. So I've had the ability to really structure the sailing team how I want it and employ a lot of the people as well, which is quite nice.
That's great. So let's hope for that team to stay for many, many years.
Yeah, it's a great team. We're having a lot of fun and I hope we'll be around for a while.
That's great. So talking about the future, what's your goal with sailing? Do you have any, dreams?
Yeah, I think if I go back to when I was younger, my dream was to race the America's Cup. And that was purely because I was in Auckland sailing my Optimist.
And hearing them when you were in them, classroom.
In my classroom, exactly. Yeah. They were sailing around. When there was no wind, they would drop their sails. They would come over and would all go and tie our Optimist up to their boats and jump on and walk around and have a look. And it was, quite an experience, to be honest. And that's really set my dream on the America's Cup. And I think as life's developed and the sport's developed a lot, that's changed. I think there's a lot more opportunities around. But for me, the dream's always been the same. I just want to be racing against the best people in the world on the best boats in the world. And currently that's probably SailGP, to be honest. And I'm loving it. But I also have a few other dreams. One would be to race around the world. And hopefully one day that will come, and I'm sure they'll be in foiling boats, so that'll be exciting.
But it will be a faster lap around the world.
Yeah, hopefully.
You are a Kiwi guy. We have a quite stable America's Cup team from New Zealand, and now it's all come down to that the nationals, the rules that you have to actually have a team from your country. So I would love to have you on that boat if I could decide. How does it work, and how's your road to get into that, if that's your dream?
Yeah, that's it's not easy, to be honest. And again, it's I guess it's a case of probably knocking on doors, and I haven't really been knocking. But there, when I was growing up match racing and we were younger, the team was for sure the best in the world, or one of the best. And it was good to have that sort of ambition and dream to go sail for them. But in sports in general, teams are quite closed. Teams are very closed, and it's really, really difficult to get in. And Team New Zealand's always been a very tight group of guys and girls that are involved in it, and there's not a lot of people coming in or going out the door, I'd say. And as it's evolved, that team's got a lot younger as well, and now you've got Peter Burling, that's one of the drivers of the team. I guess in my eyes he's young because he's slightly younger than me, but maybe we're
young.
Old now.
No,
the old guys.
Go there.
Again, it's quite the team's quite small as well. And my specific skill set is very similar to Peter's or Nathan Outeridge, who's now there. So there's not a lot of room. And as boats are going faster, the sailors are actually getting less as well on board. So there's not a lot of job opportunities, I would say. And and being based in Europe probably doesn't help. It's something I guess if I was really, really committed to trying to do it, I would have a good crack at it, but I'd definitely have to move back to New Zealand to make that feasible.
Mm. Mm. We see what the future brings.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm happy.
Yeah. Do you have any Olympic dreams?
My Olympic dreams are very limited. Yeah, no is my answer. And I would probably say it's because you sail one boat, you dedicate so much time to sailing one boat and getting being a perfectionist in this boat, which is cool. I would say when I had Olympic opportunities, the boats weren't very exciting to sail.
But you still have, like if we look at the age range, like in the NACRA, for example, we have a few quite routine guys older than you. Would you see the NACRA boat as maybe the boat for you?
Yeah, it's funny. It's actually funny you say that because I've looked at it maybe 3 years ago. I was like, maybe I should have a crack at a NACRA. And I think at that time, I was probably a little uncertain of where my career path was going with SailGP. And I thought maybe that could be something for me. It's a boat that probably suits my mentality, my skill set. So I was, I was interested in it, but actually someone really talked me out of it. They said, don't bother. And this is someone sailing the boat at the time at a very high level. And but since then I've actually the last month I've sailed the NACRA maybe 4 or 5 days, and it is such a fun little boat and really enjoyable. And everyone I go and sail on it with, they say, oh, it's so powerful, such a big boat. And I'm like, man, this thing is a toy. This is like a little go-kart that you just play with in the backyard or something. Like, it's quite fun to sail, and I've actually really been enjoying it. But the way I look at it is you have to dedicate your life and soul to sailing that boat if you want to win. And as it stands, I probably don't have that time, and I'm pretty content with what the racing that I'm doing and the learning that I'm doing. And who knows? If you look at Santi, then maybe I'll take it up in my 50s.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Is it a matter of the possibilities to actually earning money as well? Because I guess what you do today, you actually can do it as your daily job. And the Olympic sailing is not maybe like that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I guess in the professional sailing world, you earn money and you can earn a living off doing it. And currently is my livelihood. So, yeah, to go and commit everything into sailing an Olympic class boat, which is meant to be amateur, would be difficult. From that standpoint. So it's definitely something that's always considered when you're trying to make decisions. And yeah, the dogs have to eat.
The dogs. How many dogs do you have?
I have one dog.
Okay.
The dog needs to eat.
Okay, the dog needs to eat. Phil, you've done so many cool things. SailGP, the win on Marstrand 2016 was quite amazing. What's your best sailing memory so far?
Oh, that's a tricky one. The win on Marstrand 2016 was a pretty unique experience. That was a very cool memory. And I guess that's just a massive build-up of many different things throughout my life. And for it to peak at that moment on that stage and that event was, very cool. And that's for sure one of my best memories. But I have so many. And they range from probably ocean racing, breaking masts in the middle of the ocean and doing a lot of damage to boats and actually getting back to shore and some cool experiences. And then again, sailing an F50 for the first time was probably one of the scariest days of my life.
Yeah, but I was about to ask you, are you never scared? But now you said it.
I think it's good to be scared because, you know, I guess you're giving a lot of respect to what you're doing.
The tension is there.
The tension's definitely there at times, but it's also just trying to be relaxed in it. And I'm a big believer of a saying that you've got to get comfortable feeling uncomfortable. And these boats make you feel uncomfortable at times, but the more you do it, the more comfortable you get at it. So you might as well just start being comfortable.
How's about the risk calculations and stuff like that? How much do you think about that? Maybe you do it before racing more than in racing. I don't know how it works, but if you're, let's say you're me and you're dreaming about the AC40 and, you know, it's speed, it's a lot of speed and you can get scared when you think about it. How would you like, how do you do to do it so it's not dangerous?
I guess it becomes less dangerous with the more knowledge you have and skills you have as well. But you also have to do some learning. So it's going to be dangerous when you're, maybe not dangerous, but I don't think our sport's extremely dangerous. But you have to do some learning. And I guess you got to learn in a slightly structured way and maybe do it on boats that aren't, that the consequences maybe aren't so high. But also, I think foiling and sailing now is getting a lot safer, and the more knowledge designers and sailors have, the better we're getting at sailing these boats. And I've sailed some pretty wild little boats at times, and the super foiler being one of them. And I look back at that time now and like,
crazy.
I contribute all my learning to that boat.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It was phenomenal how much I learned, and that was scary.
Okay, yeah.
That I was sort of scared, but also aware that you have to be pushing those boats as well. And I did so much learning sailing that boat, and I honestly don't think I would be able to sail the F50 as well as I do without spending the time doing that. And that was a little crazy at time. A lot of sailors said no, they didn't want to do it due to the risk of maybe getting injured or the boats just being a little bit ahead of their time, I would say.
Yeah.
But I look back now and I actually think would be able to sail those boats at a really high level safely.
Yeah.
And a little more in control, maybe is a better word to say. So it's, I think they were maybe a few years too early, those things, but very cool crafts.
And how was it when you first stepped into the M32? It's a Swedish designed catamaran. And I remember when it first came and we had like the best Swedish sailors on board, like, holy smoke. But then just it took maybe a year and then it felt like, you know, so easy to sail the boat. How was it for you first time?
Yeah, it's funny because I was probably quite similar in a way. And the first time you sail a catamaran like the M32, you've come from a monohull background, suddenly you're doing 12, 13 knots upwind. And that's crazy.
Yeah.
You think this is so fast, and you turn the corner and you do 25 knots downwind and you feel like your hair's on fire. But it's amazing to think back at those times. And now I do 30 to 35 knots upwind and 40 to 50 knots downwind or reaching. And that's starting to feel not very fast now.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's,
yeah, you push your limits.
The body just adapts as well. Yeah. And the more you push those limits, the more, I guess, you get comfortable doing those speeds. And it's normal for the body and the mind and all those sensations just, I guess, become null.
Yeah.
so it's quite special. And I'll give an example of actually sailing in Saint-Tropez maybe 2 months ago. And it was 30 knots, more at times. It was the windiest day I've ever sailed an F50 in, if not maybe any boat. And typically a foiling boat like that, you can't really sail much over 20, 22 knots because the speeds are too high or the power's too much in the sail. So the beauty with SailGP is they have the little wings and it just gives you so much more control. Mm. You're so much more depowered. It's like having a reef in your mainsail. It's easy, a lot easier. But your speeds go up another 10, 15% because you have no drag. And it was a very, very windy day, 30 knots. And I just remember coming off the start line and you are doing 50 knots, 51 knots, reaching with 8 other boats 2 meters away from you, all around you. And some of the things that you would do in 10, 12 knots, like when you're reaching and you just sort of reach right over in front of someone, is pretty natural. But to do that in when you're going 50 knots, knowing the consequences of if someone of the 6 on board makes a mistake,
yeah,
they're going to crash. You've got nowhere to go.
No.
You could be, yeah, a massive catastrophe, I guess, in terms of a crash. And I sort of ended the day going, I think this is too far. We need to change the rules. There's got to be like a super high speed rules as well. But I also sit there and think, well, maybe it's just going to be normal. Maybe we just have to trust people. Maybe we have to learn to adapt again. And this is normal now. We're going to be racing at 100 kilometers an hour right next to other people and sort of luffing people and doing these crazy moves that you would do in 10 knots of wind or whatever. And again, when it comes to foils and different foils, and the F50s are talking about putting T-foils on the boat. And now...
What's a T-foil?
So right now they're L-shaped foils,
okay,
I guess.
So okay,
they don't go out the side of the boat. So
no.
The T-foil would be, yeah, just a T at the bottom, I guess. So you've a little like the Moth and the AC-40s as well.
Yeah, you have to have more than 2 minutes.
Two meters
apart.
Yeah, exactly. So now boats have got these blades hanging out the side of them, and people were going, oh, what about the safety and what about the racing, like boat, there's going to be a huge crash. And to be honest, maybe there will be in the early stages, but I also think as humans, as sailors, as people, we're going to learn that that's our barrier, that's our limitations.
Yeah.
And you will get close, and if you look at what you've done in your career, you're very comfortable getting within 5 centimeters of another boat, but you know how your boat's going to react compared to theirs, so you can do that.
Yeah.
And eventually we're going to have these blades hanging out the side of our boats, and we're going to be doing those things as well. So, yeah, I think it's something the sport's evolving, and humans, as humans, we're going to adapt to it.
Are you this kind of logical sailor, or do you sail more with your, gut feeling?
I do a bit of everything, I would say. Yeah, I think you have to have a lot of logic and sort of your approach and strategy to it as well. But I think as a athlete or a sailor, you have to go off instinct as well. And it's more so as the speeds build, and the faster you go, the more your instinct is probably a lot. But it's the same principles. If you're getting really good information from everyone on board, you're going to make a lot better decisions, and your instinct's going to be a lot better as well. So, yeah, it's still a team effort.
I would gladly sit here one more hour. There's so many things to talk about, but luckily we have you here in Sweden. I might catch you again.
Exactly. We can still do it another time.
Yeah.
Plenty more stories.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming. We learned a lot, and I'm sure that the younger sailors, but also the elder ones that likes the slow boats, will get some adrenaline out of this episode and will like to go foiling in the future.
I certainly hope so. Yeah, even the older ones, you've got to go. Get into it.
That's great. That's the mission for the future for everybody. Phil, before I let you out of this studio, who would you like to listen to in the Seaglings pod and in the future?
Ooh, I like that.
You don't have to pick a Swedish name.
Uh-huh.
Actually, are you good at... how's your Swedish?
Oof. Should we start again and do it all in Swedish? Or?
Skulle vi kunna det?
Ja, vi kan.
Men herregud, då gjorde vi fel språk.
Nej, jag kan inte prata.
You can. But you've always been quite, you've tried.
Yeah, I've been to school a couple of times to learn. But the real hard, well, my excuse.
Talk about the time again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, you're just so in and out of the country. And it's something that I notice a lot is, like, if I'm here for 3 or 4 weeks, I'll start to speak a lot more and start to think a little more and listen more and understand a lot more. And then you leave, and when you come back, it's all like you almost start again. It's quite It's quite difficult. But
if we meet you down at the harbor, mm. and let's say you're a,
bara
a young...
Bara prata svenska.
Ja, bara prata svenska. Ja. Så if you're, om du är en ung seglare och så ser du Filla på hamnplan och så känner du, jag vågar inte riktigt prata engelska, då kan du tänka, nu är det jag som har övertaget, nu pratar jag svenska och så hoppas vi att du fattar. Ja.
Precis. But be patient.
Yeah, okay. That's, we have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
Okay, but... who would you like to hear in?
Yeah, look, I would actually like to hear from Fredrik Bergstrom. He is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
But I think he's got some good stories, and maybe
he's in that boring. He was.
He sails it. He used to sail that horribly boring boat. So get him on.
Yeah. Ask him what's so fantastic about the 470.
Sailing the world's boringest boat. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great ending of this super nice hour with you, Phil. Thanks again for coming, and good luck in the future. We'll for sure see if you drop some new episodes on your YouTube page.
Nice. I think you tripled my views by going and watching all my videos.
Yes. Oh, all right. See nice. You on the water, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Anna. Thanks for having me.
Det är verkligen en innest att få sitta så här länge och få höra en så grym seglare berätta om den professionella seglingsvärlden. Hans proffssida är ju glasklar. På bilder ser man en målinriktad och fokuserad Phil. Och nu kan vi alla som har lyssnat på detta avsnittet hålla med om att han är en superskön kille som älskar att leka och vara på vattnet. Precis som vi andra. Tack för att du har lyssnat, och vi hörs igen om 2 veckor.
En poddproduktion av Fredag.